So we're going to talk about keeping of Shabbat, and Allison has been experiencing this with her friend Alan. Yeah. But in Orthodox Judaism, their Shabbat is kept, is very, very important tradition. But also in Conservative and Reform Judaism, there are some levels of observing Shabbat, and even among secular Jews, there's some level of observing Shabbat. But in Orthodox Judaism, it's a time for studying the Bible, for studying the Word, for reciting prayers. And this is an important thing to understand about Judaism, is that in traditional Judaism, when they talk about praying, there's a book called the Siddur. And the Siddur is a prayer book. It's got pre-written prayers in Hebrew. And so if you've seen pictures of people like holding a book in their hand and nodding like this, that's called davening, by the way. When you do this, it's just something that people kind of naturally do when they pray. But they're reading the prayers in the prayer book. And the kind of prayers are the things like we recite in our service. They're in Hebrew. And most of the Orthodox understand them. In the Conservative and Reform synagogues, a lot of times people don't know what they're saying. They're able to repeat the prayers, but they don't know what they're saying. And it's a time for rest and doing family things. And there's prohibitions on working or carrying things or lighting a fire. And actually, if you guys want to show up Friday night, just three nights from now, Elizabeth and Merrill, I think, and myself, we're doing a Friday evening thing to help people who want to learn how to keep the Sabbath, how you do it. So we're going to teach people how to do the candle lighting prayer and a little bit about the challah bread, and then the end of the Sabbath service, which is called the Havdalah service. So if you think it's 7 o'clock on Friday night downstairs.
When's it, this one?
It's Friday, the 15th.
This Friday, right.
So we'll learn a little bit more about that. Also, travel on the Shabbat is not done. And we find a reference to that in the New Testament, where it talks about a distance called the Sabbath day's journey, which is about 0.6 miles. And that was in place even in the time of Yeshua. And we talked about this last time, that driving a car, because the spark plugs are going off, is interpreted as kindling a fire. That's why people don't drive. And no buying or selling goes on. But you're not supposed to be really spending time in prayer for things, for people. We had an interesting thing happen a few years ago. We had a couple in the congregation that felt called to reach the Orthodox Jewish people. They were both Jewish. And so they decided to live an Orthodox lifestyle. And I learned from them that we would have like prayer time before the service, and they were saying that we shouldn't be praying, you know, for somebody to get a job or for somebody's housing situation or things like that. Only prayers for healing and prayers, you know, like thanking God. We learned last week that circumcision is allowed on the Shabbat. So some of the things that are very important to understand is that over the centuries, millennium really, that the Jewish people have attempted to keep the Shabbat, the rabbis were often called upon to make judgments as to what could be done and what could not be done. And those judgments are recorded in the Talmud. And as you observe those judgments, what you see is that they're always made way over on the side of being if there's any doubt about whether a thing should be done or not, they always make the judgment that it should be done. It's always over on the side of being more strict. And so over the years, what developed out of that was a tremendous amount of legalism. And it's still there. And the amazing thing is, if you remember the scriptures we read last week about the conflicts that Yeshua had with the Pharisees about Shabbat, what we can see is that legalism was there way back then. 2,000 years ago, it was already developed. And that's why he said what he said, you know, Shabbat was made for man, not man for the Shabbat, because it had already become so legalistic. There were so many rules that people felt like they had to follow all the rules and obey the Shabbat. So the Shabbat was like the master, and the people were the servants to it. So just to give you some examples of this, I remember back in when my daughter was in middle school, we were living in Brighton, and she became friends with a little girl who was Orthodox, and she would go over to their house, and when she was over at their house, she came back one Friday evening because she came home just before the Sabbath started at their house, and she told me, they're pre-folding the toilet paper. Everybody grasp the meaning of that?
Yep.
Folding the toilet paper was considered work. So on Friday, they would pre-fold the toilet paper so that they wouldn't be working. And I just kind of took a deep breath. Like, that's incredible. That's really legalistic, you know, doing things like that. You may have observed some things, anything
like
you want to
share. Like, stay on the whole time.
Like what?
Lights on the whole time. The whole time. If the TV's on, it is not turned off until sundown Saturday night.
Mm-hmm.
There's absolutely no use of a telephone.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
No computer, no electronic devices.
So all of these are interpreted to be work or the lighting of a fire. So, and again, you can see how the rabbis always their judgments are
on the
cooking is done before. And this is why, like in Israel, when Shabbat would start at sundown, the work day actually ends around noon, and people go home and start preparations. So they'll cook meals, and you're allowed to keep the meals warm, but you're not. You shouldn't be cooking. So they cook the meals.
And there's no cleaning of dishes afterwards. Like after you eat, all the dishes just go into the sink.
Okay.
Go to a special place because they're not. That's work to clean up.
Mm-hmm.
Unless it's a really really big family gathering, and then for health and life sake, they use that loophole of it's for health and safety, for preserving life, that they wash the dishes.
Wash the dishes. Okay. Mm-hmm. How about a dishwasher? No dishwashers. Electronic device.
Yeah.
When we were in Israel, they had the slow cooker just to keep the food.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Crock-pot.
Yeah, crock-pot.
Because it's on from before Shabbat, and it just stays on.
Right.
Yeah, and we try the dish, they make it just for the Shabbat special.
Okay. Yeah. So the candles, again, that has to do with all that, and the candles are lit before the sun goes down on Friday night, so you have the lights all through the day, and you can keep the candles lit, but not kindle a fire, is the thing. So the thing to understand about this, though, I think that's most important, is that all of these decisions and all these rules were developed by people who rejected that Yeshua was the Messiah, and so what we understand is that the law of God has to be followed as led by the Spirit of God. And that's, we even have an expression in our legal system about that. Do you ever hear, when you're watching a courtroom trial, the judge will say something, this is the spirit of the law, meaning it's more important than the letter. This is really what the law was trying to accomplish, and the letter of the law sometimes is not that. So what as a messianic congregation, we try to follow the law as led by the Spirit of God. But again, if the rabbis over all of these past two millennium have been rejecting Yeshua as the Messiah, then they could not have been led by the Spirit of God to be making all of those rules that they've made. So this is why we don't accept a lot of those rules. Now, the other interesting thing is that in the conservative and reform communities, they don't accept a lot of those rules either. And they're accepted as Jews. The Orthodox think that they're not, they're not as holy as they are. They're not as faithful as they are, but they certainly are accepted as Jews. But the Reform Synagogue has a big parking lot, and people drive to services and turn the lights on and all those things. And my family is really, they make up all kinds of weird rules. It's like my aunts kept kosher home, okay, but when they would go out, they'd go to the Chinese restaurant and they'd have shrimp with lobster sauce, or pork spare ribs, But in the home, so their like way of thinking about it was, I have a kosher home, but I can go out and I can eat, And another interesting one, I might have mentioned this last time, is in Rochester, there's only one Jewish delicatessen. It's called Fox's. Mm-hmm. It's down in Winton Place, and it's a great place. But several years ago, They decided to stay open on Saturdays because that was when they got the most of their business. This is a Jewish delicatessen, but people are going out to eat on Saturdays, especially the Reformed and secular Jewish people. And they lost their kosher certification over this because they had a certification. And they said, we don't care. And their business did not drop off because, you know, they didn't. Yeah, yeah. And understand also that the whole kosher certification thing, that's a big business. There are rabbis that make their living by inspecting food processing plants and restaurants and stores. You know about this?
Yeah, a friend of mine has a factory in New York City. Does like pierogies and pelmenis, all that stuff, like raviolis. Mm-hmm. It's kosher stuff, but he pays like $10,000 a month to rabbi to sit there and...
A month?
Yeah.
Ooh!
That's a lot.
$10,000.
The small packages look so... They're very
so
good,
expensive.
But they're so expensive. Like,
yeah.
It's ridiculous.
And they inspect...
You have to be the pay for $10,000.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Meat processing plants, even farms that are producing kosher food. They inspect all these things, and they make their living off of this. So it's you go in the store, like just in Wegmans, you can pick out lots of things on the shelves that have a little kosher
mm-hmm.
stamp on it, and that means that the rabbis have approved that, and the company who made that had to pay for the rabbis, you know, to approve that. So it's a big business.
There's a lot of abbreviations too, like K-U-R.
Yes, right. There's different levels of kosher. In fact, there are Orthodox people in Rochester who will not eat the food from the Orthodox stores in Rochester. So they only go to New York City like once a month and get this food from the stores in New York that are more kosher.
One of my customers
is like that?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
She buys like a couple of things, that's it.
Uh-huh. So it's a big deal, it's a big business. And again, you know, there's lots of the world, there's lots of, the world that has gotten into this whole thing, as you can see by all of the business that it has become.
I can see how you become a slave to the Shabbat.
Yes, so you can become a slave to it, right, right. And what, like I said, it's just amazing. When I read that verse, when Yeshua said, man was not made for the Sabbath, but the Sabbath for man, I knew what he was talking about because I was aware of how people were enslaved by the Sabbath. But what shocked me was, that was 2,000 years ago. And they were enslaved by the Sabbath back then, and that's why he was making a big deal about it, you know. And it's just human nature is so amazingly, perverse. Yes, I would say that take something that God gave us to be a blessing, and to pervert it into where it becomes a bondage, and that's just how deceptive the enemy is. How he can make these things be bondage, and you know, unless we get down on just Judaism for that. Certainly the church has done the same thing. And there are many people, you know, who have left different denominations and churches because they felt it was bondage. And all of the rituals and all of the traditions and all the rules that they had, and you can't do you can't do this and you can't do this, which is great if they're in the Bible, you can't do this and you can't do that. But when it's all things that men have made up, that's when it becomes the same legalism.
I had a question. There was a gentleman that I had a discussion with yesterday. He's Catholic. And with the recent situation with the current pope, or pope, I should say, that we've been resigning, we got on the subject of Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Because he was talking about some things. And so I just happened to, you know, kind of bring it up in terms of the Sabbath versus Sunday, and that I know that it was the Catholic Church that changed that, and there's documentation that shows that, but the Bible says that you don't change a word
mm-hmm.
in the book.
Right.
And so his explanation of that was that I guess the Pope at that time was inspired. It was the Holy Spirit that told the Pope
mm-hmm.
to change this. And I said, and I didn't go any further. I just said to myself, yeah, but if the book says that the word does not get changed.
How do you change it?
How do you?
Yeah. Well, look, this is a really interesting subject, and it relates to both Catholicism and Judaism. So what developed in both of those religions is a belief that the council, the deciding councils, like in Judaism it's the Sanhedrin, and in the Catholic Church it's the Council of Cardinals, or or the, I think they have some sort of a council for the doctrines of the faith. I think that's what actually what Pope Benedict was head of before he became Pope. That they actually take precedent over the scriptures. Okay, and it is amazing that both Judaism and Catholicism came to the same conclusion. And so where do you see these kind of things in Judaism? There's an interesting backwards things, like there's a law in the Bible that says that, you know, if your brother marries someone and he dies without children, then you are supposed to take that woman as your wife and have children with that woman, and that child has as much inheritance rights as your children, as you do. It's because he's taking your place, in a sense. So in Judaism, that has totally been turned upside down, okay, by the councils. And it's, you know, that's just because they've made these rules. But Catholicism also has made a similar position, that the councils of the church take priority over the written word. And
so
that's
smarter than God.
When the appointed councils, like led by the inspired Pope, take this position, both religions say that it is a higher authority than the Word of God. And this is why a lot of people leave those religions. Right. But that's the reality of it. And again, you can see human nature getting in there and wanting to have its way. The next thing I had on your note there is about how Sabbath is kept by Christian groups, because there are many Christian groups that actually keep the Sabbath on Sunday and don't work. When I was a child, my family lived in New Jersey, and they had what were called blue laws. Anybody here remember blue laws?
Mm-hmm.
Blue laws were that stores could not be open on Sunday. Mm-hmm. All the stores had to close.
No alcohol.
The liquor stores could not open. Bars could not open. Right. And the churches encouraged people to worship. In fact, most Protestant denominations have a morning service and an evening service.
Yes.
So you'd have that pattern to your day. Worship in the morning, spend time with the family in the afternoon, and then worship again in the evening.
A big family dinner.
Right.
Yes.
Sunday
family
dinner.
So we see the attempt to keep the Sabbath, but they've switched the day, is the thing. And we looked at that verse last time where God said he blessed the seventh day. So it's kind of weird to say, well, God, you're blessing that day. I don't care. I'm going to keep it on this day. So in the Messianic movement, how do we keep it? It starts Friday evening at sundown, and that's a big difference. And we encourage people to keep it in homes. We used to have a Friday evening service here. Actually, until we started doing the grocery distribution and the Tuesday evening Bible teaching that we do, we used to have a Friday evening service. But it became too much when we tried to continue to do that. And people would come. But in most of the Jewish community, Friday evening service is not that big a deal. Mostly it's kept in homes around the table. But it's a time for rest and to do God's business. That's how we kind of look at the rules, like why we keep the bookstore open. Well, it's God's business. It's to get the word, spiritual materials into people's hands. And we believe that, you know, travel is okay. I saw a teaching on an Orthodox Jewish website where somebody was asking, ask the rabbi type of thing. Well, you know, I live too far away. I live more than a Sabbath day's journey away from the synagogue. What should I do? Stay home, basically, was the answer. That was it, you know. Have Sabbath at home.
Don't make a phone call, though, because that's lighting the fire.
Right. 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 So a lot of the way that we try to encourage people to keep the Sabbath is to be led by the Spirit of God and to follow the verse that we looked at last week in Isaiah, where it says that the Sabbath should be a delight, Isaiah 58, we read verses 13 and 14. So if the Sabbath is becoming a burden and it's not a delight, then you should change something. But also in Leviticus 23, it says that there's to be a holy convocation. So this is why we meet, you know, on Shabbat. And I think I talked about last week how that verse has had such an incredible effect on almost all the cultures in the world. Jewish, Christian, and Muslim all meet once a week because of that verse, mm-hmm. to worship God and to stay connected. So we try to keep that that delight in the Shabbat attitude right. So let's take a look now at one of the scriptures that's very important to non-Jewish people about the Shabbat. And again, if you remember, when we divided the laws up into the Jewish laws and the moral laws and the spiritual laws, it's never really clear whether the Shabbat law is a Jewish law or a spiritual law, because it's obviously a spiritual thing, make a time to spend with God, but it's also a Jewish thing because it's the sign of the Mosaic Covenant. So let's see, why don't we start over here, go this way with Karen. You don't want to read? Okay. Larry, Isaiah 56, verses 6 and 7.
The foreigners who join themselves to Adonai, the Lord, to serve him, to love the name of Adonai, and to his workers, all who keep Sabbath Shabbat, and do not profane it, and hold fast to my covenant, I will bring them to the holy mountain, and make them joyful in my house of prayer. Their burnt offerings and sacrifices will be accepted upon my altar, for my house will be called the house of prayer for all peoples.
Okay, let me try the question.
What is God's promise to Gentiles who keep Shabbat?
Verse 7. Take a look at verse 7.
Bring them to the holy mountain.
Okay. Anybody have any insight? What does that mean? What happened on the holy mountain? His presence. Yeah, that was where God's presence was. And see anything else in verse 7?
Be a house of prayer for all the people.
Mm-hmm. Anybody?
Joy.
Right. Anything else?
Sacrifices.
Yeah, now this is very important because you see, Gentiles could not come and make sacrifices at the temple. But now he's saying you can come and I will accept your burnt offerings and your sacrifices. So in our times, we don't make burnt offerings and sacrifices, but that's worship. That's worship and prayer, the sacrifice of praise. So he's saying, you will enter into my presence, and I will meet with you.
Janet? I just have a quick question. Like before, in the old times, when the temple was, so the non-Jewish people, they could come, because I know they had separate places where they could pray for non-Jewish and
yes.
Jewish people, but if they were doing sacrifices, so for a non-Jewish person, he can come to the Jewish place and do
sacrifice, the non-Jewish people could come and offer sacrifices, and God's saying here, because I think the situation was that it was unclear before Isaiah said this,
okay.
that a Gentile could bring a sacrifice and the priest would take it and would make the sacrifice for him. But here Isaiah is saying, yes, you can do that.
Because
but there's
I know they had different
there was a
right.
court of the Gentiles. And they couldn't come into the inner court where the sacrifices were made. So I don't know how they did that. They might have, you know, handed it to a Jewish person, bring this to the priest for me, something like that. But I can't recall any place else where it says the Gentiles could come in and offer the sacrifices. Because Isaiah is, you know, like 1,000 years after Moses.
Yeah.
So this may have been
because I just read it, and this is the first time.
Yeah. So basically, he's saying here in our own time that I'm welcoming the Gentiles into my presence. I'll give them my joy. They can bring their worship and their praise and their prayers. That's the offerings and sacrifices. My house will be called a house of prayer for all people. They will be able to pray to me. But there's conditions on this, right? What's the conditions? Verse 6.
Keep the Shabbat.
Well, that's one. There's more.
Join themselves to the Lord.
Join themselves to the Lord. Love him. Love the name of the Lord. To be his workers. That means serving him. That's in the other translation.
And love his name.
And hold fast to my covenant. So in other words, God is inviting the non-Jews to be part of the covenant here. He's inviting them in. Even this is 600 years before Yeshua. He's saying, if you will come in to the temple area and you will keep the Sabbath and love me and serve me, I will accept you. So this is pretty amazing that this was happening 600 years before. But what's really interesting is that keeping the Shabbat is specifically mentioned as one of the things that you have to do. I mean, it doesn't say a lot of the other things that you have to do, just to keep my covenant. And I believe that the reason for that is because, remember, Shabbat was the sign. Shabbat was the sign of the covenant. So if you're not Jewish, let's say, and you want to come in and be part of the Jewish people, and they're going to look at you like, what are you doing here? But if you're keeping Shabbat, that's a sign that you're throwing in your lot with the Jewish people. And this is so amazing because in the Messianic movement, this is exactly what happens. Because we have a Messianic congregation, basically Jewish people who believe in the Messiah. And then non-Jewish people come in and join with them. And they feel like, well, am I allowed to do this? Can I? And we say to them, well, we're meeting on Saturday. If you're willing to meet on Saturday, you're in. because really that's what happens, is that people who are not Jewish are kind of stepping out of their own comfort zone, out of their culture, into this other culture. And the first step is Shabbat, because it's Saturday. And so the first step, not for Nate, because he comes to Tuesday night, but not Saturday that often.
I think it crossed over when the moon, they got it wrong one time on the moon. And they think, they had a 3-day curve between how much of the moon was showing.
Right.
So I guess both days.
Okay. But most people come, to the Shabbat service first. And that's been the pattern in the Messianic movement, that people will come. And that's like when they ask me, well, I think God's calling me to get involved. How do I do it? And I say, well, you've already done it. You've come and worshipped on Saturday. That's the first step. And that's a sign. And it's amazing that this was written back when all the Jewish people were worshipping on Shabbat, because they were all in Israel. But now that's a sign in all the cities around the world that you're Jewish, is if you're keeping Shabbat, because it's visible.
I've been asked if I'm turning Jewish by my family, because I'm
keeping Shabbat.
Yeah, I'm
right,
keeping Shabbat.
Right.
And they're like, you don't go to church on Sundays? I go, sometimes. They go,
well,
you go, I go on Saturdays. Are you going Jewish on this?
Right. Now, there's another really interesting phrase in here. That, how many of you have heard the phrase around the Christian community of the house of prayer?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big thing. There's house of prayer in Kansas City, is it? Rick Joyner's thing is called the house of prayer. And there's all these different houses of prayer. And we had one here in Rochester for several years. It was a group, and they would sponsor prayer events. It was great. I used to participate with them. But it always amused me that they took it from this verse. My house will be called a house of prayer. But they didn't read verse 6, which says you're supposed to keep Shabbat. And actually, some of you may know this person. His name is Dick DeGroat.
Yeah.
Some of you know Dick?
I grew up with him. He was my youth pastor.
Really? Okay. Well, Dick started the House of Prayer here in Rochester. Mm-hmm. And what was really interesting is that in the last few years he was here, they've moved to Florida now. But in the last few years he was here, they had a house church, and they would meet in his house. But they decided they would meet on Friday night, because they wanted to keep the Shabbat. Mm-hmm. And he had me over there a couple times as their speaker on their Friday night meeting. It wasn't real big. It was like maybe 25, 30 people. But they purposely met on Friday night because he caught that. He read verse 6, I think, is what happened. But so many others just don't see that.
I met people back in Ukraine growing up. When we had, like, we didn't call the church because most of the Baptists, they will call, this is the house of God's
right.
prayers, yeah. But they will interpret it like, oh, we go on Sunday, so it doesn't really matter. Just like, but for me, as I was starting here, as we read, God bless this day. So this is like something that people
right.
be like, okay, he blessed this day, not Sunday. So I cannot just switch around and be like, okay, whatever, we can go on this day.
Well, that's the amazing thing, and that it was done so long ago that most people don't even understand why or how. But if you study about it, it was obviously done because the church wanted to separate itself from being Jewish. So they didn't want to be considered Jewish anymore because of the replacement theology and because of the animosity between the traditional synagogues and the Messianic synagogues, and because of persecution. So they stopped having the holidays and they switched to Sunday, and it's so long ago that most people don't even realize when or why it was done. One of the most interesting things I have ever read about this was actually by a Catholic theologian. It was a little tract that I saw that he had written, and what it said was that he was accusing the reformers from the Protestant Reformation that Luther started back in was like 1500s when the Protestant Reformation. He was saying, if you guys really wanted to go back to the Bible, why didn't you go back to worshiping on Saturday?
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And it was a priest. I mean, this is Catholic theologian. It was like, if you really wanted to do what you're saying, because that's what the Protestant Revolution Reformation was saying, we want to go back to following the word, why didn't you switch back to Saturday?
That's a good point.
I think they had their wall up. They were Anglos. And
yeah, they had their Jewish wall up too, right.
They didn't want to. I just think there's a little prejudice.
Yeah, yeah.
When you go by Emperor Constantine, he said, by this sign, conquer, saw the flaming cross.
That was his
next
turn.
To the sun.
Yes.
Sun
and Sunday is the day of worshiping the sun in the Roman way.
The Buddhist under Constantine.
Mm-hmm.
That's the Catholic Church.
Right, right.
It was a plug-in, though. I mean, the Roman Empire was already celebrating on Sunday to the sun god.
Right,
and
right.
And everybody said, hey, the real god's
right.
here.
Right.
They didn't want to change the day. Mm-hmm. And it almost, they fell into it, really.
Right,
it was easier
right.
for them economically. Do
yeah, but I've read the documents from the Council of Nicaea, and basically you can read them. They're available online. That's when the decision was made. And basically they were saying, we don't want those Jews to be telling us what to do anymore.
There you go. There's the
and
prejudice.
That was it came out of that. We are those people haven't received Jesus as the Messiah. And who are they to tell us what to do? So that was
made a separate day.
Yeah, this is where it came out of. All right, so let's move on now to the amazing thing that happened in the book of Acts when God, actually, I've never seen it before tonight, but what happened in the book of Acts was a fulfillment of Isaiah 56 that we just read, where the Gentiles would be welcomed into the house of God and allowed to make sacrifices and offerings and all that. So we were up to Catherine over there. If you would read Acts 15, verse 20 and 29. But let me just give a little background. This is the letter that the apostles wrote to be sent out to all the cities of the Roman Empire to tell the non-Jews who had become believers in Messiah what they needed to do and what they didn't need to do in the area of Jewish laws. It's very important to understand that this was in the area of how Jewish they needed to become, because people get confused about this, but they just made the assumption that the people had to keep the moral and the spiritual laws of God. I mean, that was like a no-brainer to them, that they weren't, people who came believers in Yeshua weren't now allowed to kill or steal or lie. Those are moral laws. They had to keep those. And they were not allowed to worship other gods, So they had to keep the spiritual laws also. But in terms of the Jewish laws, this was the big debate. Did they have to get circumcised? Did they have to keep kosher, not eat, you know, non-kosher food? Did they have to celebrate all the holidays? This is what they wrote to them. So if you could read 28 and 29.
For it seemed good to the Holy Ghost and to us to lay upon you no greater burden than these necessary things, that you abstain from meats offered to the idols, and from blood, and from things strangled, and from fornication, from which you keep yourself, you shall do well.
Okay.
Fare you well.
Okay, so you want to try the question there?
What requirements were placed on the Gentile fathers, our followers of Yeshua? Well, they had to keep from idol worship, and eating foods and whatnot offered to idols. They had to keep themselves sexually pure.
Okay. Right, so I've thought a lot about why these particular things were given. And the first three of them, what's been sacrificed to idols and from blood and from things strangled, are really the same thing, because if you slaughter an animal by strangulation, then the blood is left in it, as opposed to the kosher way of slaughtering, which is used in our society, which is to slit the throat and let the blood drain out. So these are really the same things. My understanding of this was that they wanted to enable fellowship between Jews and Gentiles, table fellowship. So the Gentiles would know, I'm having my Jewish friend over, I'm not going to serve him pork. Okay, and the Jewish person would know, because pork tastes different from chicken, you know, or from beef. But there was really no way of knowing if the meat had been sacrificed to an idol or if the meat had been slaughtered in an improper way. So the Jewish person would be taken by a, you know, surprise if he went to his friend's house and he was offered beef. Okay, it's beef, it's kosher, but it was offered to an idol, or it was not slaughtered in the right way. So I think that's why they gave him those rules. And I think the fornication thing is that I believe there were laws in the Roman Empire against adultery and against fornication, but I believe they had become so corrupt at that point in history that they just felt they had to reiterate that, because it was becoming a very accepted thing. Maybe a lot like our culture today, with so many people, you know, living together without being married, that they felt that they needed to emphasize that in order for the believers to feel comfortable going into the house of people. I mean, you can imagine you've led this, you know, your non-Jewish co-worker to the Lord, and then he invites you over to his house, but he's living with someone and he's not married. And I've been in that situation, and it's, you know, it's a little bit sticky as to how approving you seem of that or not. I've had that happen in my own family, and I remember being over at my sister-in-law's, and she was living with this guy, and we were there and we had dinner, and it was like, we really don't feel comfortable spending the night here, if you can understand the feelings there. It was like, and we left. You know, so I could see why they would have added fornication. But I think these were all about trying to make it possible that the Jewish believers and the non-Jewish believers could be in fellowship with each other, table fellowship, and be able to relate to each other in their homes. So, Lee, you want to try the next question there? Right. You won't find it in the scripture. Let me put it another way. Okay, so they didn't have to keep these Jewish laws. Were there other laws that the new believers in the Messiah who were not Jewish that they did have to keep? Maybe. You're thinking it's too complicated, or that it's really simple. They had to keep the moral law, and they had to keep the spiritual law. Yeah, they basically had to keep the moral and spiritual laws of God, because otherwise that wouldn't make any sense at all. Oh, you're a new believer in the Messiah? Well, you know, all you have to do is not eat meat, sacrifice idols, and this. You could do anything else you want. Right? I mean, that doesn't make any sense at all.
It Ten Commandments, basically, that human beings.
Yeah, they would have expected them to obey the Ten Commandments. Now, the question of whether, again, it's difficult to determine whether the Sabbath would be included under the spiritual law or under the Jewish law, because it's both. So if you were like the Orthodox rabbis who made the decisions always on the more strict side, you would say, yeah, they need to keep the Sabbath too. And actually, after reading Isaiah 56, kind of sounds that way. Okay, we are up to, did you just read, Allison, or did Leah read? Huh?
It's my turn.
Leah's turn. Okay, Acts 15, 9 and 10. And again, this is all in that council. This is a very, very important chapter. Acts 15 is called the Council of Jerusalem, where they sought the Lord as to what they should do with these non-Jews who were coming to believe in the Messiah, how they should tell them they had to live. So 9 and 10.
And put no difference between us and them, purifying their hearts by faith. Now therefore, why tempt ye God to put a yoke upon the neck of the disciples, which neither our fathers nor we were able to bear?
Okay, so.
So what is the yoke? The disciples are the people who just came to Christ, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that would just be like the yoke of judgment.
Okay.
That they weren't able to bear.
Anybody else? Other thoughts?
Would that be a burden?
It would be a burden. It says it's a burden, right?
Could it be the oral law?
Yes. Yes, it's not, here's my understanding of this, and this is pretty different from what you'll get in most commentaries. Most commentaries say that this is the Jewish laws. That's the burden it's unable to bear.
Mm-hmm.
But I believe it's not the Jewish laws, it's the traditions that were built up around the Jewish laws. That's what made them a burden. And they're still a burden today.
That's the advantage of Judaism.
Right. So those traditions that had grown up around the law, which made it unbearable, which is way back to what we said about what Yeshua said about the Shabbat. The Shabbat was made for man, not man for the Shabbat, implying that the rules, that man-made rules that had been developed about the Sabbath had become a yoke unable for our forefathers to bear. And we need to see what great grace this was, that God moved through these apostles. We've talked about this before, how all their lives they had been taught not to have any kind of association with non-Jews, not to go in their house, that the non-Jews were lower than them. There was all this prejudice there.
Unclean.
Huh?
They were unclean.
Unclean, right. And then the Lord begins to get them saved, and in Acts chapter 10 he did it in a dramatic way so that the apostles could not deny. They came, you know the story, Peter came and preached the gospel to them and they believed and they started speaking in tongues, and that was the miraculous sign that convinced the Jewish believers that these people really had been accepted by God. So now that they've been accepted by God, they had a struggle with, do we make them become live as Jews or what? And the Holy Spirit spoke at this council and said, no, they don't have to live as Jews. They just need to keep a couple of these things, keep the moral and spiritual law. They don't have to keep all the Jewish law. And, you know, when I think about that, it's just amazing grace that God moved through these leaders to welcome the non-Jews in that way. And because it was a radical thing. I think it was a really, I think Peter took a lot of heat that's why he had to explain it over and over again. It's explained like three times in the book of Acts by the other leaders. I mean, there were whole factions amongst Messianic Jews that said, no, they have to be circumcised. They have to live as Jews. It's almost like, you know, what's happening in Israel right now is if you're an Israeli and you want to get married and you're not Orthodox, you have to leave the country and go to Cyprus to get married, and then the state of Israel will accept your marriage. The reason is that the Orthodox control the whatever ministry it is that accepts marriages, and the Orthodox say that if you want to get married, you can only be married by an Orthodox rabbi. To do that, you have to become Orthodox. Not only do you have to say you become Orthodox, but you have to demonstrate it by living as an Orthodox Jew for years. And that could have been the response of the apostles. You see the similarity there? You want to become a follower of Yeshua? You need to become like us. You need to keep all these laws. You need to get circumcised. You need to do all these things. And the grace of God was saying no. And I think they really wrestled with that. And then they did it. And it was one of the most tradition, prejudice-breaking things I think that was ever done. And just powerful. So, okay, let's look at Romans 14. This is another passage here. We are up to who, Allison? 14, 5, and 6.
One man considers one day more sacred than another. Another man considers every day alike. Each one should be fully convinced in his own mind. He who regards one day as special does so to the Lord. He who eats meat eats to the Lord, and he gives thanks to God. And he who abstains does so to the Lord and gives thanks to God.
So this is a verse that's often used to say that the Gentiles have the right to worship on any day. Okay, and if you want to try the question there, Allison.
To whom is the book of Romans written?
Yeah, it's definitely, if you read through Romans, it's written to the Gentiles.
It's to the Gentiles.
Right. So this is not to Jews he's writing this, because that would be, you know, that would be contradicting the Torah for him to say that. That would be, he would be taking Yeshua's words where he said, I didn't come to destroy the Torah, the prophets. That would be contradicting his words. So this is in line with what they were told in the book of Acts. And again, this is where it becomes difficult to say, well, this, the Sabbath should be kept, though, by the Gentiles, because here he says any day. And he also, I believe he's addressing, like, vegetarianism here, because, you know, a person who abstains from meat and who doesn't abstain from meat, he says, let them, don't be judgmental on people. If this is what they want to do, they can do that. Do you see that? Any other questions about that one, Nate?
You've heard the Marines or military say, every day is a holiday and every meal is a feast. You've heard this?
Uh-uh.
Is that like a pagan thing? Then if you make every day holy, and, you know, like you were saying, which caught me, you say the Buddhists and the Hindus, they don't have the seventh day.
Right.
They have any time they feel like that. Is that a pagan epitaph that I just said?
I don't know.
What the military was saying is that every day is a gift.
Yeah, I think it's a different context, really.
Yeah, a different context.
Yeah. But I've heard, you know, in the church, people will say, like, every day is a Sabbath because we're in the Lord. Every day it should be like a Sabbath day. You should be serving the Lord every day and being in his presence, which has some meaning to it.
With the first Christian, like Jewish Christian follower, I heard, like, from the history, they were worshiping and getting together every day.
On the other days of the week, certainly.
Yeah.
But they were commanded to get together on Shabbat, so
yeah,
they would have been getting together.
I'm just saying, the first Christianity.
Yeah, I'm sure they met in the middle of the week,
yeah,
in people's houses,
yeah,
and even in the temple courts. It says, in fact, it says in the book of Acts, daily they met in the temple courts.
Yeah,
that certainly happened. Right. But you know, Yeshua always went to the synagogue, and on Shabbat, and Paul, whenever he went into a into a city, he always would go to the synagogue first, because people were keeping that custom, that law of getting together on Shabbat. So the summing up all the stuff about Shabbat, what attitude should we have toward those outside the congregation and those inside who don't keep the Shabbat the same way we do? What we try to encourage as a congregation is to say it's up to each individual how they keep the Sabbath. Okay, as a congregation, we keep it in a certain way. So, you know, we worship on Saturday, and we would not, for instance, want somebody to come and be mowing the lawn on Saturday because it's Shabbat. But we do have the guy who plows the snow come on Saturday because we want to get people into the parking lot. But we wouldn't call a work day, let's say, where we're going to work on the building for Saturday. We do that on Sunday afternoon, usually. So as a congregation, we practice the Shabbat certain way, but we try not to be judgmental about how anybody else keeps the Shabbat. And then one very important point is, what about all of us have friends who are in churches and, you know, haven't caught this Messianic Jewish bug yet, so they're worshiping in churches, and there's a possible tendency for people to become like a little bit spiritually proud and say, you know, well, we keep the Shabbat and you don't, you know. And we try to discourage people from that, because if you carry that to its logical conclusion and you say, well, you know, the church is wrong, they switched it and they've never switched back, then basically, you know, you're saying they're in sin because they're not keeping the Sabbath. And that would isolate us from the rest of the body. And in the Messianic movement, we are very sure that God has called us to be part of the body, not separate from the body. But there are congregations, there are groups within the Messianic movement that are very separatist. And you can pick that up if you go and fellowship with them for just a little while. And they're like, no, we've got it right, they got it wrong, they're all in sin, you know, be here with us. But we are not in that place. And I have many pastor friends, and for many years I was involved in pastors' fellowships, and it was great for me to be able to do that, not only because of the fellowship, but it also brought our beliefs to these pastors. And many of them were very receptive and very interested in it, even like I was talking about my friend Dick, who ended up, you know, having their services on Friday night because he was so much feeling moved in that direction. So we encourage people to not make an issue of that with their non-Jewish friends who are going to church, and that's wrong. I believe in the scriptures it says that when the Messiah returns, all things will be restored. Okay? And it was about a year ago, I remember, the Lord showed me that the Sabbath was one of the things that will be restored. It'll be restored to the church, and there'll be this switch back. And the holidays will be restored. Yeah. Right. So one of the, you know, we sometimes think that when God's going to do something like that, it's going to be zap. But one of the ways that it's being restored right now is by the existence of Messianic congregations that are meeting on Shabbat. And pastors know about this, and, you know, there's a conviction there amongst them that this is happening. And if they know the history, they know why it was switched. And I haven't met many pastors that struggle with it, even right now.
They know where it says that the sentence that's going to be restored.
The reference to that,
yeah.
I don't know. It's in the book of Acts.
Acts.
Yeah, where it says that he's in heaven until he returns and with the restoration of all things. And one of those things, I believe, is Shabbat is one of those things.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to say, I used to work for Honeymoon Protection Services, which is a security outfit that we had in the complete front and center. And there's such a thing called eternal vigilance, you know, where you don't put your gun, you don't let your guard down.
Mm.
So we would have to work on Sundays or holidays, but we, you know, as a Christian, I just said, you're going to do your job, you're going to do your responsibility. And we rotated so you would have another
right.
Sunday to do it or something, but you didn't give up that security,
mm-hmm.
which
if I'm right, that's what happened when the Greeks put the head of the pig in your temple.
Mm-hmm.
You gave up your security.
Mm-hmm.
It was like you were so devoted that you basically didn't fight,
mm-hmm.
and you were taken over. So that's not happening in this society
mm-hmm.
in the same way.
Right.
So
right.
So we kind of rotate our holidays,
right.
too.
And you know, there's laws, actually, in America that people have to have their day of worship off.
Right.
Well,
so you can demand that.
But
know,
I would never...
Whether you're Jewish or you're Christian or you're Muslim, you can insist.
I could have refused
yeah,
to say
but
I will
right.
can
work on Sunday.
Fire, yeah.
But
they can fire you.
But my church would not condemn me for working on Sunday.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so they would say, just come when they give you the day off.
Right. Right.
Or take an hour.
Right. And again, we try to leave that up to the individual. I've known personally people in the congregation who were convicted about this and, you know, eventually managed to change jobs or whatever so that they could have Saturday off. My daughter's struggling with it right now a lot. She works at Alpha and Omega. This is really ironic. She works at a Christian bookstore, but they won't give her day of worship off.
Because they're closed on Sunday.
They're closed on Sunday because it's their day of worship, right? She could demand it, and they might fire her. And she was having me proofread a letter that she was writing a few months ago. She backed off from it in the last couple of weeks. But she was about to, you know, like write a letter, say, I insist now. Either you give me Saturday off, or you fire me. Basically, that was what she was.
So is
she
working every Saturday?
She works every Saturday.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah.
But she works down here too on Saturdays too. You open up.
She has to go into work and works 2 to 8. And
that's work to open a bookstore after.
Well, again,
service.
The work of the ministry. We talked about that. That's something that should be done on Shabbat. And well, actually, she does. She's on salary, but I get paid, and it's my work day too.
So I go into the store after service and open my wallet, and I'm
yeah.
in sin right there.
No.
Buying a CD.
No, because because we've made, again, this gets back to the really important point that we've made a judgment, a halakhic judgment, about which law takes priority, and so our position about the bookstore is that go into all the world and preach the gospel, spread the good news, takes priority over not selling anything on the Sabbath. So we understand that when the people come together for the worship service, that's the time when they can get their hands on spiritual materials.
Or they can have somebody who's not a believer come and buy something.
Well, yeah, you could do that, but we've made the judgment that we should keep it open, and that's okay. Now, if they were selling, you know, other things in there, that would not be the case. But because we're selling Bibles and we're selling books about the Lord and, you know, prayer shawls and things like that, that's the case. We kind of, I think we kind of slip on the candy. Because all the kids run in there and get candy.
You should give it to them.
Yeah.
So with the Attitudes, isn't there a place where Paul said we're to be all things to all people?
Yes. Yes, so that fits right in.
In there, and so I didn't know where it was, but
right.
I was remembering that there's a scripture, so would that be something we need to be aware of when we're checking our checks and balances with Attitudes so that we don't become self-righteous in
right.
what we know, because we have to judge those who don't have the same knowledge that
right.
we have.
Right. And I've always tried, you know, in all of my teaching and speaking is to win people to my point of view by saying what's good about it rather than criticizing what they're doing. So, you know, it's concerning Shabbat, there's these benefits to it. This is the day the Lord blessed, you know. That's rather than coming down on them for it. So, again, it's very controversial, but it's very important to not go out of this class and go to all your friends who are going to church on Sunday and say, you're all sinning.
Yeah, going to hell.
You're going to hell.
There is churches like that. They, mm-hmm. like, if you're not part of our church or you're doing something differently, oh, you're not going to hell. They're
I know. Right.
I've been in churches where they've actually said their translation of whatever Bible they're using is the only
yep.
correct translation. I'm sitting there going, isn't there like 27 or 29 translations of the Bible?
Yeah.
And why is this one congregation
right.
saying that
this is the only book and anything else is not acceptable.
Right. And just to give you a sense of how much that has happened, the Catholic Church, up until 30 years ago, maybe you know better than I do, Nate, they believed that only Catholics were saved.
Yeah.
That Protestants would not go to heaven. But they finally changed that, right? And I don't know how long ago.
Yeah, there was a statement made in church about a month ago saying, yeah, that's what you're saying.
But the actual, from the top down, made that decision like 30 years ago. Right. So they now acknowledge that other denominations are of God.
Full of the Spirit.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I like what she said a couple of weeks ago about the more you adhere to the Sabbath, the more blessings come into your life. So without being crazy about it, like I'm not going to tell those people I'm not working, but if I have my choice and I say, you know, I have religious reasons why I can't work this day, can you help me out? And it slowly breaks down. You don't have to be so stubborn.
Right.
But what you were saying is the Lord blessed you even more.
I didn't realize it. It was just a revelation here. So my drive wasn't to get blessings. It was to just be more in alignment with what I was feeling the Lord was calling me to do, to be more obedient to what my understanding of practicing my faith is. So the more I was learning about it through this class and stuff, came the revelation of I was getting all of this cascade of recent coming into blessings of all kinds of things that just exploding. And a lot of it is driven from the realization that I was starting to keep Shabbat every Friday night. I would go with Alan, and he started inviting me to his home, and I light the candles. I say the prayer in Hebrew for the woman of the house to light the candles. So he was teaching me how to keep the Sabbath. And we would do a Shabbat service, so now it's like we have a Friday night date. Mm. We have Sabbath dinner together.
Huh. Uh-huh.
And it's not broken.
Uh-huh.
I've been doing that for several months.
Just the real weighty reason for all that is that you're setting aside one day in seven to spend with the Lord. Mm-hmm. That's the big thing. And we can all say, oh, I'll do that every day, but we don't. You know, life interferes. Yeah. So when you do take some effort to make it special. And you know, go somewhere, like go to services, or then you see other people doing it. It encourages you to spend that time with the Lord. And that's really the benefit, is that's why God gave it. It's because we need the physical rest, but we need the spiritual infilling.
But it's not a witness to Jewish people if you keep Sunday. Even go to the Seventh-day Adventist Church.
Right.
They've had a Shabbat for 750 years. Yet they have no ministry whatsoever in the denomination of the Jewish people.
So
the Shabbat by itself, but I believe that the one of the stronger ways of living the Jewish people is keeping the feast days.
Sure.
Which is the Passover Lamb, Pentecost,
right,
speaking in tongues, and the Feast of Sukkot.
Uh-huh.
Now, and especially you talk on Acts 2, verse 1, how Pentecost type of Mount Sinai the law and his voice and his presence.
We'll get to that.
And that's how we can be a witness to do you.
Right. Well, but Shabbat can be a witness too. I mean,
could
you imagine if all of the churches in Rochester all switched from Sunday to Saturday,
yeah,
the Jewish community would be like.
Well, I have to tell you, since I've been observing, Ellen's been a lot more receptive.
Uh-huh.
And his family is a lot more accepting of me.
Right, just like Isaiah 56 said. If you want to demonstrate that you're becoming, you want to be part of my people, here's a way to do it. Keep the Shabbat.
And that's what's happening. And Alan's been telling his mother especially that I've been keeping Sabbath with him.
And that makes a lot of points. Right. Julie, you had a comment or a question?
I made chariots of fire.
Yes.
On holiness.
Right. And that was back when Sunday was really kept as a real real holy day.
I was definitely trained at Brighton High School, and Brighton has a very large Jewish population of their high schools, other students there. And when we would have sectional games. I mean, there were kids that were on the football team, and those were Friday night football games.
Right.
They couldn't play, so they switched to soccer, where a lot of games were on Tuesdays or Thursdays. But then when we had sectional playoffs, there was one girl who was definitely a practicing Orthodox Jew and was forbidden to play in a sectional game. And the school athletic director actually asked the other school that we were competing with, if they could slide their game to Saturday night instead of Friday night, so that this girl's Sabbath could be honored. And they did.
They did?
It happened one time. Because she was a senior in high school.
Wow.
And it was going to be like one of her last games.
Wow.
Type of thing. But it was really interesting to see how when I worked at a school where there were Protestants, Buddhists, Brighton had a lot of mix of Jews and Christians and Hindus and all kinds of faiths, how they tried to work through and honor all of the kids' different holidays and feast days and just work through everyone.
Right.
But it was really interesting to see how the athletes really struggled, because you'd have your Friday night football games, your Friday night basketball games, all of your sporting events, and the Orthodox Jewish kids couldn't compete.
Right. There was
on Saturday.
There was a team, a high school basketball team, just this last year, I remember reading about it, that made it all the way to like the finals of their whatever, and then the final game was on Shabbat, and they refused to play, and the authorities said, too bad, you lose. They didn't allow them to switch it. But
But it's the sacrifice and the cost, and it's almost like, well, what's more important, following God or following man?
Right.
And they chose following God.
Yeah.
So I am sure their blessings are going to be amazing.